they're saying, hey, okay, the GREET model says that this is worth like 30 some points, but we kind of want to maybe update that a little bit. So we're just going to kind of pull a number out of our butts and say, let's go 10 points, right?
It's really 45 years of history and tradition. We blanket the entire United States. I mean, for folks that don't know about Fastline, our goal and our mission is to connect buyers and sellers within the agricultural community.
Today on Ag News Daily. Well, Delaney, welcome back to the studio. It's great to see you again in person.
That's right. It's been a little vacation for me to be away from you. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Yes, exactly. And this is cool. Never before do we have a live studio audience, so this will be a great one. So welcome back to the weekly edition of the Ag News Daily podcast. And I think if this goes well, we might have to have a in-person audience all the time.
That's true. With like the little laugh sound effects that play in the background of sitcoms, we'll have that in real time.
That's exactly right. But we always start off with weather. So rain continues the next week for most of the Midwest. The pattern stays active here in the Midwest, with a gap between storms remaining short as other systems will continue to move across the region in through the weekend. Another one is eyeing the region early next week that may come through in several bursts. The moisture is likely to be needed for the summer, but it is going to delay planting. The Southwest is not in a favored location for getting much precipitation into next week, but there's a possibility on Sunday and an off chance of better storms coming through later in the week. Weak conditions will likely continue to fall if significant rain does not come soon. Scattered showers are expected to move through the northern plains through Friday, which includes a little bit of snow, Delaney, in Montana. After a very short break, a much stronger system is in the forecast for Sunday into Monday, with widespread moderate to heavy rainfall. Of course, southern Brazil has some heavy rain too. Much of the safrinha corn crop and growing areas in Brazil will be dry for the foreseeable future, as it will also be hot, which will force the corn to draw up its limited subsoil moisture as the crop goes through the rest of pollination and grain fill. Damage to this crop will become more apparent with time. We will have to see whether or not weather brings more into the picture for what the progress looks like in this week's planting report. So how did that shape up, Delaney?
Yeah, you know, we saw a lot of progress in this last planting progress report, but I think the week ahead of us, we're not going to see quite as much progress. As you noted, quite a bit of rainfall coming through the Midwest. But corn has started to emerge in 10 of the top 18 states. Soybeans saw some pretty substantial progress as well, now at 18% complete. While spring wheat has progressed along nicely, now 34% done in the top six growing states, winter wheat has not had as rosy of a picture. 30% of winter wheat has headed across nine of the top 18 growing states, but conditions are really starting to decline, Tanner, in pockets of the country, specifically in Kansas. 31% of the Kansas crop is currently rated as poor to very poor, and they definitely have the worst winter wheat in the country. Taking a look at the latest U.S. drought monitor, Kansas in particular shows about 84% of the state is sitting in some level of drought conditions. So I think it comes as no surprise that those winter wheat conditions continue to decline.
That's right. We did see some news on the Farm Bill. Congress says it's time to get serious about the Farm Bill. This week, Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow made comments about the plans for the Farm Bill to get across the finish line. Chairman G.T. Thompson also shared comments this week that made a firm date to plan to get the bill marked up and voted on by May 23rd. It appears that snap cuts will still appear to be delaying the progress of this moving forward. This bill is a product of extensive and transparent process, which included soliciting feedback from members of both political parties, stakeholder input from across the nation, and some tough conversations. Each title of this farm bill reflects a commitment to the American farmer and a viable pathway to funding those commitments, and is equally responsive to the politics of the 118th Congress, says Chairman Thompson. So we'll continue to get updates there. Delaney,
do you think we're going to see it passed on May 23rd?
No, not a chance.
That's pretty aggressive.
Nope.
Well, Tanner, there have been so many fresh headlines, rumors, and stories circling around avian influenza this week. It's been really hard to keep up. Had some conversations with dairy farmers this week, but we had a fresh story to add fuel to the fire as Michigan was declared an extraordinary animal health emergency, is now required to implement what state officials are calling the most comprehensive measures in the country. Under the Michigan Emergency Order, all dairy and poultry operations must follow these very strict protocols. They must designate a biosecurity manager and establish a perimeter that limits access to livestock. They must establish cleaning and disinfection procedures at those access points. maintain a record of vehicles and people who cross all points. They must keep all lactating dairy cattle and those in the last 2 months of pregnancy from being exhibited until there are no new cases of HPAI in Michigan for at least 60 consecutive days, and they have to keep all poultry from being exhibited until there are no new cases of HPAI for at least 30 consecutive days. This new order will go into effect on May 8th, Tanner, so dairy farmers must act pretty quickly to get these measures in place.
Yeah, that's going to ruin a lot of 4-H and FFA plants, I think, in the state for the summer. But meanwhile, the USDA, FDA, and FSIS have been conducting multiple rounds of testing on human-grade products to confirm their safety for consumers. The USDA's Food and Safety Inspection Service announced results from 30 ground beef samples on Thursday pulled from the states with infected herds. The samples were sent to the National Vet Service Labs for PCR testing and showed up negative. The FDA also conducted fresh tests on pasteurized milk, confirming that the U.S. milk supply is safe. So a little silver lining and some good news there.
Really trying to reassure consumers, Tanner, that these products are safe. Midweek this week, the Teamsters Canada Rail Conference announced that close to 10,000 workers at the Canadian National Railway and Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railway voted to authorize another railroad strike. The vote was fairly unanimous, as 97.6% of those 10,000 workers voted in favor of authorizing that strike. According to the collective bargaining process in Canada, if a vote authorizes a strike, there is a mandatory 21-day cooling-off period before that strike or stoppage can actually occur, so the earliest this strike could go into effect is May 22nd. This potential strike would only apply to Canadian rail workers and networks, as U.S. railroads operate under a very different rail agreement. However, any rail delivery originating in the U.S. and destined for Canada or originating in Canada and destined for the U.S. could be impacted by that strike. Some U.S. ag exports go through Canadian ports, but the even more important factor to keep an eye on is the substantial volume of fertilizer that originates in Canada and is delivered to the U.S. via market railway. During this mandatory cooling-off period, negotiations should continue, so perhaps an entire strike will be averted, but more to come on this headline, Tanner.
That's right, certainly more to come. But the April Ag Economist Monthly Monitor, a joint survey of nearly 70 ag economists conducted by the University of Missouri and Farm Journal, shows economists' views on the ag economy didn't deteriorate from March to April, but their view on the current ag economy when compared to 12 months ago continues to show growing concerns. Everybody is waiting to see, Delaney, what this weather is going to be like this summer and what kind of crop we'll be able to put into the bin. But according to the data analyzed by the University of Missouri, the change in net cash farm income is a strong metric to use when looking at eroding ag economic picture. The change is expressed in real dollars from 2024 to 2023. That change is second only to the deficit from 22 to 23 itself. This is the largest drop in net cash farm income over the last 2 years. The Ag Economist Monthly Monitor also asked the question about the risk of consolidation in the row crop side of ag. Economists were asked if the current environment of declining commodity prices could accelerate consolidation in row crop, Delaney, with other allied industries. Nearly 80% of the respondents answered yes. Economists said that geographies at the greatest risk of consolidation are the areas that rely heavily on wheat and cotton production, where drought continues to be an issue. They also pointed out the size of an operation will be a factor when looking at mergers and consolidations down the road.
That was a big story for you to chew through, Tanner.
Big words.
Well, this is a big story, but we're going to let a guest do most of the unpacking. The new GREET model is finally here, nearly 2 months after the Biden administration stated it would be released. The U.S. Treasury and IRS issued their updated guidance on the Sustainable Aviation Fuel Tax Credit that aligns with the new Inflation Reduction Act's goal to boost SAF production. Following the release of the updated model, you better believe that many groups had something to say about that new model, including Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig, who said, quote, as the top producing state of lower cost and cleaner burning biofuels, sustainable aviation fuel is an emerging market with huge potential for Iowa agriculture. Unfortunately, the Biden administration is once again telling Iowa farmers that Washington, D.C. knows best. The administration's proposal mandates rigid requirements that ignore the innovation of agriculture and fails to recognize farmers' ability to incorporate the best practices that work best for their individual operations. This administration has continually pursued a one-size-fits-all approach that puts domestic energy production, like homegrown ethanol, at a disadvantage to international competitors. Yesterday's guidance is more of the same. Tanner, we figured who better to help us break down this story and unpack the new model and what that means for rural America than one of the pioneers in this space himself, Mitchell Hora. Well, Mitchell, we are super excited to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for hopping on with us. Big update this week, right, with the new GREET model, only 2 months behind when the USDA said that they were going to pull that together. Secretary Vilsack at Commodity Classic, I know you're ready to grill him about when that was coming. We finally have it. What's your overall take on this new GREET model? Quick feedback.
Yeah, there's a variety of different things. I mean, number one, better late than never, I guess. We knew that 40B tax credits themselves really weren't going to like impact farmers or ag, right? 40B ends at the end of this year. Very, very few folks are producing sustainable aviation fuel today. Only one group is producing sustainable aviation fuel utilizing ethanol today, as far as I know anyway, and that's LanzaJet in Georgia. They're only a 10 million gallon pilot scale plant. So small scale, they are utilizing ethanol. It's a great proving ground, but this doesn't really move much money. But what it did is it gave us some amazing indication as to what's coming down the pipeline with the 45Z tax credit, which goes beyond sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, and it includes ethanol, biodiesel, and renewable diesel. So that's what we're really excited for. And we got some great indications as to how we should be preparing and what's going to come down the pipe, which is great. And that's what we needed. So it's been an exciting week here in the world of Continuum Ag.
So I got to sit in on the press conference that you held, and congratulations to you, how fast that filled up and how large your audience was. And unfortunately, we don't have an hour today to talk through everything like we did then. But I would encourage our listeners, if they don't get their answers today, to reach out to you and your team. But let's first start out. What's one of the biggest takeaways that you have identified coming from this announcement?
Yeah, that press conference you're referring to is on my YouTube page. If you go on the Continuum Ag YouTube page, should be one of the newest things. If you search 40B on YouTube, you should find it. But yeah, we had 520 people on that press conference. Nuts. And we had to shift and change things all at the last second because our Zoom room was all full. I went to log in on the press conference and it's like, sorry, room's full. You can't be on. I'm like, I'm supposed to be the guy. But we made it work, and kudos to my team for they made it happen. So, but anyway, okay. So a couple of key things, and I actually have a blog that's coming out on my 7 key takeaways on Monday. Okay, but if I recall, one of them being they didn't destroy agriculture on the concept of indirect land use change. Okay, we thought that the metric was going to go up, which would basically hurt all of these efforts. I don't want to go into the details, but they didn't screw up indirect land use change. Big win. They punted on the feedstock calculator of the GREET model, which is the farmer version. They punted on that. They did not update it. Hopefully they will update by the end of the year, and hopefully they will utilize the actual farm level CI score. In lieu of that, they said, we're going to give you a CI reduction credit if you source from what's now being coined as Climate Smart Ag Pilot Project Farmers, which is farmers that are growing corn with cover crop, no-till or strip-till, and using nitrogen stabilizers. You have to do all three on the entire field for corn. For soybeans, you have to do no-till and cover crops in order to qualify. So it's really there's a couple farmers that would be doing that, but definitely no ethanol plant is sourcing from 100% climate smart ag verified farmers, right? So, what it gave us though is good definitions about those three practices, and it gave us really good clarity on how to verify that you did those practices. So those are a couple other takeaways. So they punted on the GREET model, but hopefully one will come. They've said, we're going to bundle the practices and just kind of punt a little bit on using farmer actual numbers, but they give us great definitions and they've really spelled out, you've got to be verified. One last key takeaway is that I was not expecting. They very explicitly said, if you're a farmer participating in these CI programs, you can't be in a different carbon credit program or other outcome-based greenhouse gas program. I did not think they were going to rule on that, but they did. And that is a big hit to carbon credit companies that are trying to develop projects. There's still a lot of dust to settle, right? Don't be hasty and do anything, but just know that the IRS is saying you're not going to be able to stack. So, but overall, we need to be documenting our farm practices. That was very clear. It is going to take some really intense data, and it's great for what we're doing that now we have a really good idea as to what data we need to be collecting. We've already been doing it. We've already been getting it verified. Like, we're sitting perfect, but just a couple tweaks, and we're continuing to be off to the races.
I have so many questions after you kind of walked us through those, but maybe my biggest question is, you mentioned you have to be verified, you have to collect that data. What is the data you need to be collecting, and does Continuum Ag count as a verified source for the CI score?
Yeah, so we're not the verifier. So we work with a group out of Des Moines. They're called Eco Engineers. They're the verifier. And it very explicitly lays out, you got to have these people that are ISO certified and California Air Resources Board, CARB certified. So we're not that. We're not a verifier. What we are is we're the software for farmers to collect all this data. We integrate with your existing software. We pull together the info so it can go through that verification. Okay, the verifier, they don't have software. They don't have systems. They say, show us your project and we'll verify that it's legit. You know, they check the math and they look for the evidence that you actually did these practices. So that evidence needs to be receipts, as applied maps, some shape files. You have to have like the tract numbers and stuff. You got to have planting and harvest information. You got to have yield information. It spells out a variety of details, but really just plan on, you got to document and prove that what you're doing is legit. Now, what they laid out was the proof around cover crop, reduced tillage, and utilizing nitrogen stabilizers. And of course, it included, you got to have the field maps and FSA numbers and stuff. You got to have the yield data, and you got to track where the grain went, like some traceability tracking and stuff. But we anticipate we're going to have this same type of records for your herbicide applications, manure applications, and any other trip across the field. So, but it did a really good job laying out the details. And it's going to take a lot of data, but it could be some serious money to be had. So I think it's a good opportunity for farmers to, make sure that we're dialing things in, control your data, right? Control and own your data. And that's what we're doing with Continuum Ag, right? Cause that data could be really valuable.
Mitchell, how many verifiers are there across the United States?
I think, so for these low carbon fuel markets, it's my understanding, I think there's around like 24 of them.
Oh, wow. So not really a lot of folks that are getting into this.
Not a ton, because, I mean, how excited would it be to be a verifier, right? To document and check records and prove that these things are real. Like, definitely not a sexy job, but there are a couple dozen of them. So there's some options, but we like this group that's right here out of Iowa. They're really legit, great reputation. And so they're the main one that we've been working with.
So I know during your press conference, you got a lot of questions around the use of nitrogen stabilizer. I don't want to dive into that today, but I want our listeners to know they can go and get a lot of those answers. You addressed that quite thoroughly in your conversation, but what I do want to talk about is you also kind of went through the mathematical benefit of what this could be on a dollar per acre, at least for 40B, which is a little bit of an indicator of where things might come down the road.
Yep. So in the press conference, I actually screwed up the math. Okay. So, cause it was brand new, right? I mean, I had only a couple hours to figure out what the math would be. So the math, to simplify it, right? Because none of the math in this stuff is easy and completely straightforward. But a climate smart ag farmer that's verified would get a CI reduction of 10 points. And that's what they punted on, right? So on my farm, my CI score is actually a -4, which is about a 33-point drop from the default. Okay. They said, we're not going to give you all 33 points. We're going to punt on that and make sure that the models are more accurate. And then maybe we'll give you the real number. So today, if you do these three practices, we'll give you 10 points. And on soybeans, we'll give you 5. Okay. So essentially what that means in sustainability, in 40B, each point is worth about 3.5 cents per gallon. In 45Z, for ethanol and biodiesel, it's worth 2 cents per point per gallon. Okay, so sustainable aviation fuel, it's higher. Okay, so if you take 10 points times the 3.5 cents, that's 35 cents a gallon, right? So the value of the Climate Smart Farmers, 35 cents per gallon of SAF. And again, I'm overly simplifying, but 35 cents. What I screwed up is that it's about 1.7 gallons of ethanol per gallon of SAF. And what I screwed up is I multiplied 35 cents times 1.7. In reality, it's actually a divide. And I screwed that up in the webinar. So take 35 cents divided by 1.7 is 20.5 cents per gallon of ethanol. You take that times 3 to get basically per bushel, because one bushel of corn is about 3 gallons of ethanol. Again, overly simplifying, but that'd be about 61 cents, 62 cents per bushel would be the value. Okay, so about, call it 60 cents, and then say that the farmer gets maybe half of that, 30 cents a bushel. So to me, 30 cents a bushel to get verified that you're doing cover crop, no-till, and using nutrient stabilizers. Okay, if you're already doing those things, all right, if you can get a 30 cent premium, okay, that might be worth it. Growing 200 bushel corn, 30 cents, what, we're talking 60 bucks an acre. Like, that's not bad. Take that, right? Our verification deal is $5. Like, you can get some ROI on that potentially. There's no money flowing today, and I don't think there will be. But I don't think 30 cents a bushel is going to really entice a lot of people to change.
Right. Doesn't change practices.
And you're not going to change practices for 30 cents, right? At least to do cover crop and no-till and use all these natural stabilizers, right? Like, if it was one practice change or you had more flexibility on your score, okay, go after an extra 30 cents a bushel and change a practice or two. Sure. I mean, a lot of farmers probably would, but this is just a little bit clunky. But again, hey, at least this is the first time that they are recognizing ag as part of this administration's climate strategy, right? That's what they call it. And they're recognizing that we can utilize this GREET model, which is amazing. So some fantastic big picture wins. But in the short term, nobody is really producing sustainable aviation fuel from ethanol right now anyway. And none of these farmers are verified climate smart farmers anyway. So the money doesn't matter that much in the short term, but good indication for what could come down the pipe.
Okay, I want to unpack that math a little bit more to make sure I followed all that and our listeners are following it too, in case they're listening to it and not maybe watching it. So the score you mentioned, if they're doing those three things, they're going to get a 10-point score. But you mentioned your farm was a negative score. So how does the scoring model work?
Yeah, so what they did is if they were using the full model, which is the GREET feedstock calculator, my practices would be worth about 33 points. And our average farmer at Continuum Ag, we've scored over 250 million bushels. Our average farmer would be 18 points. And our average farmer is not using all three of these practices that we're talking about, right? But our average farmer is 18 points lower than the county default. But Delaney, what they did here is they said, we're not going to use the actual scores. We're going to use this Climate Smart Ag pilot program in lieu of a life cycle analysis tool. That's what the verbiage says in the IRS.
So as long as you're doing these three things, you're going to get this average score of 10. Everybody's going to get the same score for now.
They're saying, hey, okay, the GREET model says that this is worth like 30 some points, but we kind of want to maybe update that a little bit. So we're just going to kind of pull a number out of our butts and say, let's go 10 points, right? That's kind of, I think, what happened, which is, at least they recognize that those practices can sequester carbon, which we've proven on our farm. And a lot of other farmers have as well. Like, it's a good win, and some indication as to what's to come. Okay, so that's the other takeaway is, let's say that 45Z starts on January 1st. What I've been pushing on is let's get our actual field level scores. And we're going to continue to do that. But also, we probably have to add an additional layer here for these farmers that would qualify as Climate Smart Ag pilot program farmers. Probably going to have to add that as an additional layer here. So that if they don't use the GREET model the way that we want, and if they go with this bundle approach is how they coined it. If they go with that for 45Z, we need to be ready for it. And we need to know be ready to be verified as climate smart farmers for a very small subset of farmers that would qualify. So again, indication as to what we should be doing and change of practices and documenting.
It's what we should be doing, but today there's really no real way. If I go get my score, or if I get my score set at 10, because that's, I'm checking the boxes on these three practices, there's really not a way today for me to get paid on these practices. No. It's just, nope. I'm going to do this now in the hopes that in the future, this is how I'm going to add some premium.
It's basically, yeah, that's exactly right, Delaney. So hey, we need to document these things because come Jan 1, the premiums are supposed to also be there in the ethanol market. This is only sustainable aviation fuel, which is at the baby infancy stage, right? So if they use these same rules for ethanol, that's what we need to be ready for, because a third of our corn crop goes to ethanol. So for those farmers that are selling into ethanol, we need to be looking at these guidelines and figure out, okay, if they copy and paste for 45Z in the ethanol rules, we better be ready. If they do what Mitch has been saying, which is what's laid out in the law, where they can utilize the actual GREET model, maybe it's going to be even better opportunity and more inclusive, right? I think that's what we're seeing from, Senator Grassley was putting stuff out about it, and a variety of others that, hey, this check the box thing is not very inclusive for farmers. So maybe we should look at more than just three practices and make this a little bit more of a level playing field. And I agree. I think the three practices pigeonhole people too much. I think those three practices are great, obviously, but I think it is, you know, it's going to be hard to build a real market when we're only looking at three practices, when in reality, we have this GREET model that looks at a couple dozen parameters instead of only three.
Yeah. And Mitchell, I think there's been a lot of conversations that I've had. I know that you've had since this has come out. And I think the general consensus is it was almost a dip your toe in the water type release to see how everybody's going to react and how this is going to unfold before we get some more information. But as more information comes out, our listeners can get great feedback from you and insights. So remind them how they connect with you this time and they can dive deeper themselves.
Continuum.ag is our overall website. We do a Q&A session every Tuesday, a webinar. Our podcast is the Topsoil Podcast for people that like that. And I got to put in a plug for the Topsoil Summit, June 3rd is our conference that we're going to be really deep diving into this. It's down in Riverside at the Riverside Casino and Golf Resort, June 3rd. So we'll have a couple hundred people there and some pretty killer speakers and stuff. So that's the place to really dig deep.
That's right. Well, thank you again for spending the time. I appreciate all the effort you're putting forward on sharing your knowledge about this topic, especially with our listeners today.
Yeah, always fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
I listened to his press conference the day after all of this reporting came out. So thanks again, Mitchell, for joining us here. But we've got another great conversation today to give you an idea of what the machinery market looks like. So here is Dean from Fastline.
We're bringing back a familiar face and voice. I just combine it. We're going to have a whole new word. It's just going to be voice.
I like it. I can go with that.
Dean's here from Fastline Marketing Group. He's president and is going to give us a couple of updates. Welcome back, Dean.
Hey, thank you very much, Tanner. Glad to be with you. I always appreciate being on your show and all that you do for the ag community.
So remind me where you're at. Where's your office? Where are you sitting?
Yeah, so we are in Buckner, Kentucky, a small town right outside Louisville. So that's kind of been our home base since 1978 for over 45 years here for Fastline. So set up shop here and happy to be here. Most of our team is here in Buckner. Obviously, we got sales support across the country and we've got a printing facility for our catalogs that's a little bit further away from here down in Louisville.
Yeah, because you got pretty much the U.S. covered up nicely with that team that you've established.
We have. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Just really 45 years of history and tradition. We blanket the entire United States. I mean, for folks that don't know about Fastline, I mean, we really our goal and our mission is to connect buyers and sellers within the agricultural community in that space, right? And we really started as a print publication, and we've really blanketed the entire United States with our catalogs, with our sales teams, you know, out there really connecting the farmers to those equipment dealers, and then other everybody else, you know, that's looking to sell items within the ag space is a good, you know, a good mechanism to use Fastline as an advertising tool. So that's really where we've started. We still send out about 4 million catalogs a year, believe it or not, all across the United States. We've got a million farmers on our list, names and addresses. You know, through the years with our data, we've been able to develop some demographic information, crops, acreage, you know, things of that nature that is helpful for us, but also helpful for the advertisers and for the farmers themselves.
Yeah, that's impressive. And I'm sure with that, you kind of get a really good feel on what the pulse of the market is. So here we are sitting spring of 2024. How is the equipment market?
Yeah, so, okay, the way I look at the market is really twofold. I'll start with the equipment side, and then we also have like a farmer advisory group that I meet once a month with on the farmer. So I can tell at least a little bit, you know, compare notes. You can tell me if I'm out in left field or not on the farmer side of things too. But yeah, from the dealer side, you know, definitely continuing to have a little bit of art or go on things. I think the farmer sentiment's improving. But for the dealer side of things, certainly the higher interest rates are continuing to be a problem with floor plan costs. I mean, floor plan costs are almost outrageous right now, to the point to where it's critical. The customers I talk to, right, is just continuing to turn that inventory, turn that into cash, right? I mean, it's almost not even economical to hold inventory for long periods of time due to floor plan. So, you know, that is a concern. It has been a concern for a long time. I'm not probably giving you any new info on that side of things, but you know, just what I see, you know, trends in the marketplace is, you know, because of that and the need to offload inventory on the equipment side of things, I think you're going to continue to see auctions become more and more of a play. You know, just to try to offload some of the combines. Combine has certainly been notorious, you know, for higher inventory levels. I mean, well documented over the last 6 to 9 months. So still seeing that, believe it or not, it's starting to improve a little bit, but I've seen tons of combines, you know, in auctions, you know, just trying to offload and get some of that floor plan, you know, back to an optimal size.
I think the last time we chatted, one of the things you brought up was the prediction that there would be some more dealer liquidations or inventory moving via this auction vehicle.
Yeah, that was one of the things. I appreciate you saying that. That was one of the things we were looking to kind of get into the space. We're not certainly not looking to be the biggest auction house in the country. But I mean, again, going back to our mission, just trying to connect buyers and sellers. Really, that's what Fastline's all about. Servicing. We want to be for the farmers. We want to be looked upon as that trusted resource that people can go on. You know, and that's why we've had such a great name and reputation throughout the years. And then, of course, for the folks, you know, equipment dealers, manufacturers out there, we want to be that trusted marketing partner too. So we have entered the auction space. We know we talked about that last year, and recently we've partnered with ProxyBid. So we have an April 25th auction. You can find us on ProxyBid. You can also find us on our site. It's called bid.fastline.com. Really would encourage everybody to get out there. We've got a lot of great equipment for the April 25th auction. I'm going to be more construction themed. Candidly here for this auction that we're going to go once a month. The May auction is going to try to be timing of things. You know, our March one was kind of like a spring cleanup sale. This is going to be more construction. You know, May is going to be more focused on hay forage, you know, getting ready for that season that's coming up as well. So just trying to be themed out there to help the farmers, you know, help folks looking. So definitely would encourage you to come bid.fastline.com.
So it could be a little bit more of a buyer's market for combines, but what is selling really hot right now? What piece of equipment is the most expensive?
Well, I tell you what's moving a lot for our site. I mean, again, we've got a marketplace, Fastline.com. You know, for farmers out there listening to your show, please come to Fastline.com. We have about 150,000 pieces of equipment. You know, so it's a great marketplace for you to come out and go shop and kind of compare notes to other sites and things. You know, what we're seeing, the tractors seem to continue to be moving well. Obviously, tons of needs. You know, you're going to always be able to do that. So some of the lower horsepower are moving pretty quickly. We've got 3,500 of those, you know, horsepower, 40 to 99 horsepower on our site. You know, some of the mid-sized tractors, maybe from 100 to almost 300 horsepower. We've got about 4,000 on our site. So those seem to be moving pretty well. Higher horsepower, anything over 300, is kind of starting to get a little bit more stagnant as well. So that's kind of what we're seeing on our site. We talked about the combines, you know, planters, obviously getting into that season. So that's moving pretty good. We've got about 2,000 right now on our site from a planter standpoint. Sprayers, I would expect to be next in line there coming up through the seasons. So,
yeah, I saw a post on X from a fellow listener and producer that said, remind me not to trade planters the first week of April.
Correct, yes.
Without knowing the headaches that I'm going to get. So, yes, that's good for our listeners to know as far as it goes. But you alluded to this advisory group that you have put together. So tell us a little bit more about that information.
I love it, and I'm excited about it because what that does is, again, we've got to do a better job as a company of connecting with the farmers, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's why we're here, is to support those folks, make sure that we're a trusted advisor for them. So we have a monthly meeting. Have about 30 to 50 farmers or so that we'll do just like a Teams call. Nowadays, it's very easy to connect. So we'll just kind of get feedback, you know, on what they need, you know, how we can better help them. You know, obviously we're asking questions about Fastline, you know, so we're asking, hey, what can we be doing better with Fastline.com, auctions, you know, any services that we provide. But through those conversations, we also get a better feel for the pulse too, leveraging them. And then also I leverage a lot from Purdue, great, great information that comes out of Purdue as well. But, you know, from what we can see in our conversations, farmer sentiment, better story than I can give you on the dealer side of things, is slightly improving, right? I mean, slightly improving, you know, about 50% or so are starting to see, I believe, the financial conditions we're going to improve here towards the end of the year, most notably with the interest rate reduction. I know that's been well documented, right, that hopefully that's going to be coming here over the next month or two. So I think from that side of things, definitely an improvement. The other thing that I hear quite a bit about, which is interesting, is, you know, smaller percentage, but maybe a quarter of them are starting to think that right now is not a bad time to make longer-term investments, which is very encouraging. I mean, given everything that we've all been through over the last 6 to 9 months, you know, for folks that have that type of opinion, they're in a strong position cash flow wise. And then also, to your point earlier, Tanner, you mentioned it being more of a buyer's market, right? They're trying to prey on folks, you know, the dealers maybe that have excess equipment, you know, maybe they can get a deal on something. So if they're in a good cash flow position, it's a better time, buyer's market, you know, from a farmer standpoint. So getting a higher percentage of folks there, that, you know, are starting to see, hey, this isn't a bad time to make a longer term investment if they're committed and in it for the long term. The other two snippets I would give you, you know, probably not telling you anything you don't know, but I mean, hopefully farm values, you know, from their side of things are going to also improve, you know, in 2024, which is always a good sign. And then, you know, again, you still higher input costs, you know, continue to be, you know, a challenge for everybody out there.
We know as markets shift and environmental factors, whether it be economical or whatnot, changes. Right now, as we sit here in the spring, would you say it would be better if I had something to sell to put it on an auction or to list it in your eyes?
I think it really just depends. Good, great question. I would just say, how quickly do you need to convert that? I mean, I think it's certainly beneficial to always list first. Because I think at the end of the day, you can probably try to maximize, you know, your value, what you're looking for out of that piece of equipment, especially if you leverage a partner like a Fastline or anyone else that can help you with like specific marketing tactics, right? We can run social ads, we can run, you know, PPC ads, we can, you know, we can build things out to where we can really help you hit that audience to maximize your amount. But at the same time, you know, we go back to the floor plan costs, right? You got interest rate issues and you got to, hey, I got to get cash out of this thing now. And so if the urgency is there, that's where I would say auction is the play. There's no doubt about it. You're going to convert it quickly. The way we handle the things, you know, we can certainly help you, you know, if there's reserves and things like that, that you've got to get minimums out, you know, of items, that's where we can support you on that side of it.
That's great. I like that perspective that it's not a cut and dry straight answer. It's going to depend. And that's why you have trusted partners, especially like you guys at Fastline. So if our listeners want to look you up or reach out, what's the best way for them to do that, Dean?
Hey, well, great. Our team be right up there. So I would definitely look at us on our online marketplace. I talked about Fastline.com. Give us a look. www.fastline.com. We're going to have about 150,000 pieces of equipment there for you. Shopping, you know, it's always fun to go out there and hunting on things that you may be interested in. One thing I would also highlight, more information about the company, that would be fastlinemarketinggroup.com. You can certainly find us on social media. We've got a great Facebook page, over 400,000 followers. So just Fastline. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, you name it, whatever we got out there nowadays. TikTok a little bit. We're trying to play there a little bit as well. And I mentioned auctions earlier, bid.fastline.com. You know, check us out on auctions. And again, ProxyBid is another place that you can find us there, you know, from an auction standpoint as well. One last snippet I'd tell you, just from a farmer's perspective, if you guys go check us out on fastline.com, we've put this in place for you all as just way to kind of, again, provide additional support. So we've got this feature out there. It's called price comparison. And it's really more in play for some of the larger pieces of equipment, obviously track, you know, more volume pieces of equipment, I should say, tractors, combines, things like that, you know, sprayers, planters, you know, but we've got price comparison out there. So it's a tool, we mimicked it really from the auto industry. It's almost like a cars guru type of a tool. So it can help you out there with your shopping to make sure that you're getting a decent deal out there, right? So we compare, you know, if you're looking for, I'll just throw a 4240 tractor out there, right? I mean, so if you're looking for a 4240 tractor out there, you know, it's, you know, Deere, you can see, you know, looking at all we have, I think only 10, we have 10 online, but we can compare, you know, there's a bar chart that shows the price of all 10 of those that are being listed. And, you know, not to say there's reasons why things may be priced more. Obviously, hours come into play, you know, features, you know, things like that, common sense stuff. But it is a good guide for you guys, you know, to make sure that you're getting a good deal out there. That's something that we support. But we're the only one in the industry that has something like that. So
awesome. I love the value you bring to our audience. I always love having you on the podcast. I know we'll touch base again, but thanks again for your time today.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, Tanner. Thank you very much. Appreciate all you guys do out there.
Well, a big thank you there again to you and Dean for having that fun conversation. But Tanner, the Federal Reserve met once again this week and doesn't sound like they had such a fun conversation about where the overall economy is headed. They acknowledged once again that they are targeting a 2% inflation rate. However, that comes as many sectors and industry names have reported increased profits in their Q1 earnings reports. Coca-Cola, ADM, Marriott Properties, Huawei Technology, PayPal, and many others across various sectors have all indicated to shareholders that they have been more than profitable. Seems a little contradictory to what the Federal Reserve is stating, sharing that their interest rate cuts have been doing their job to get us back down to 2% inflation. Tanner.
Yeah, that's interesting too. And in the grain markets this week, are these wet conditions impacted farmers not only here, but also in Brazil, like we'd reported. This news helped push July corn futures to their new highest level since February, just below $4.60 on the board. Meanwhile, December corn futures are still hovering around $4.80 for the week. The wet weather in South America also helped push soybean meal higher this week, which added strength to old and new crop beans on Thursday, closing more than 20 cents higher in both contract months. Hard red winter wheat took a step back this week after their run-up over the last few weeks. The July spring wheat futures seemed to have found their footing after putting in a low early in April as the contract climbed to new prices not seen since February. So there you go, Delaney. What a wrap. And I feel like today news went so fast that I wasn't able to make my typical jokes.
You missed a great opportunity for kind of a wild headline this week, too. So to put you on the spot, do you have one?
I don't. But there was about four jokes I wish I would have written down if you'd have let me have paper on the table. But we all know we keep it clean here, listeners. So thank you for spending time with us. If you want more conversations about a topic, you got to reach out and let us know. Or if you want a format change or even a shout out, they got to do that on social media.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, X, and TikTok at Ag News Daily. But Tanner, what do you say with that? We wrap up the show for this week and let him go.
Let's let him go.